mean, I said Anthony Ocampo. Is that like, is that right? Is that the way it would be said in the Philippines?
It is a Spanish last name. I mean, the proper pronunciation is Ocampo. Whenever people ask me my name, sometimes I'll say Ocampo just because they usually spell it wrong. And in elementary school, people used to spell it all the time with an apostrophe. So sometimes people would.
Oh my God! You mean like if you were like like you're the Irish Filipino Mexican?
Yes. 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 Exactly.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, a conversation about the identity and history of our dear Fili Primos. Think for a moment about a last name, like Torres or Rodriguez or Santos. These are names that sound Spanish, and that's because they are. And those are last names that are pretty common in Latin America. But they're also common in the Philippines, an entire ocean away from the Americas. And that's not the only thing Filipinos and Latinos have in common. Because of Spanish colonization, these communities share similarities in religion, food, and even language. And here in the U.S., when Filipino Americans grow up in a city with a large Latino presence, like, for example, Los Angeles, the similarities become even clearer, at least in Anthony Ocampo's case. Anthony is a sociology professor at California State Polytechnic University, Pomona, and the author of Latinos of Asia, How Filipino Americans Break the Rules of Race. And he's Filipino American himself. He joins me now to talk about the book, his experience growing up in L.A. as a Filipino-American, and what his research tells us about the links between Filipinos and Latinos. Anthony Ocampo, welcome to Latino USA.
Thanks for having me here.
So when you were a kid growing up, you, as Filipino-American, you were growing up in California. You start off your book by this story where you're told that you're not, quote, genetically Asian American.
Yes. So I opened the book by talking about this story about how I was in my last year of my PhD program at UCLA. And as anyone that's gone to graduate school knows, it's not the most economically prosperous time in one's life. And so I saw this ad at UCLA that said $200. Do you drink alcohol? Are you Asian American? And I thought, this is perfect. I can make some quick money. And I called up the coordinator of the study. I gave her my name, availabilities, and everything was going fine until I mentioned I was Filipino. And she said, I'm sorry, you don't qualify for the study because we can only have Chinese, Japanese, and Koreans. And then I prodded a little bit. And I said, well, why is that? And she said, we need a genetically similar samples.
How did that hit you? Because it sounds so scientific. And I guess, you know, you're probably looking in the mirror and saying, well,
it wasn't shocking because at this point you've accumulated and heard so many stories and have done so many interviews of Filipino Americans having these moments where other people don't see them as Asian American. In fact, Filipinos in my book have talked about how even fellow Filipinos assume that they're Latino if they don't get to know them or talk to them. There are all these stories that people shared about Filipinos not being seen as Asian. And I thought that was something worth exploring a little bit with when I started this book.
Most people who are not Filipino or Asian would probably step back and say, Filipinos, yeah, they're Asian, like kind of not even thinking twice about it. But you're saying that the way Filipinos identify themselves and the way other Asians identify Filipinos is where it starts to get...
It gets a little bit murky, right? So I think one thing we have to know is that everybody walking around has their own sense or their own set of rules in their head for how they categorize other people by race. So, I mean, geography is one way that a lot of us categorize people. They might say things like, oh, the Philippines, it's in Asia, therefore Asian American. But what a lot of people forget is that the term Asian American is a category that started around the 1960s. When Chinese American, Japanese American, and Filipino American activists got together and said, hey, we don't have the numbers, and so we gotta unite.
So
So the term Asian American is a relatively new term, but the history of Spanish colonialism and the influence of Spanish culture on Filipinos back in the homeland, as well as Filipinos here in the United States, that's something that started over 3.5 centuries ago.
So maybe just give us kind of the quick history for those people who are like, wait, what? Because the truth is that Latin America and the Philippines was colonized by the same entity, and that would be Spain.
Right. So the 3.5 centuries of Spanish rule, which has had a long lasting effect on cultural residuals that live on today in Philippine society, as well as in communities in the Filipino diaspora. So you have things like Roman Catholicism. So 80%+ of the Philippines is Roman Catholic. And it's not just the fact that these people identify as Roman Catholic. You can see it. So cars are decorated with images of the Virgin Mary, Jesus. The church has played such a central role in the way in which Philippine society is structured. In LA, what you'll see is Filipinos and Latinos living alongside each other, and they'll start to notice that we have a lot of words that overlap in both the Spanish language and the Tagalog language. The thing I'm sitting on right now in Tagalog would be silla. In Spanish, it's silla. The things on my feet are zapatos. I have my bottle of water on a mesa.
I know. I was looking at the little list that you put together in terms of, you know, what is shared between Spanish and Tagalog. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot. I was like, wait, we share the same word basically for pants, pantalones, mm-hmm. camiseta for shirt. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that we can't walk away from the fact that we were colonized by the same people, the Spaniards.
And that's what happens in the neighborhood. You know, I grew up in Eagle Rock, California, northeast Los Angeles. It's about 20% Filipino, 35% Latino, mostly Mexican-American. And when Filipino and Latino neighbors, they hear these words, they think to themselves, well, this has to come from somewhere. And so the consciousness about colonialism becomes activated because we live in such proximity to each other.
Coming up on Latino USA, my conversation with Anthony Ocampo continues.
Lou Diamond Phillips, who's also Filipino-American, his most famous role is La Bamba. I always joke to my friends that Richie Valens was played by a Filipino actor.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Hey, it's Guy Raz, host of the TED Radio Hour. And on this week's episode, we explore what it takes to inspire people to action and to start a movement, and why some movements endure and others don't. You can find the TED Radio Hour on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back. And when we left off, Anthony Ocampo was breaking down some of the similarities between Latinos and Filipinos. We're going to jump right back to the conversation. So I think for me, one of the more revealing parts of our shared history was really understanding the role of Filipino migrant workers, mm-hmm. along with, you know, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, the United Farm Workers. So for those who don't know, what was that relationship? How was it that Latinos and Mexicanos were both doing migrant work in Northern California?
Right. So when you think about the early history of Filipino Americans moving to the United States, today we tend to see a lot more of the professionalized migrants, college graduates, people like nurses, engineers. But for much of the early 20th century, the Filipino Americans that came here were recruited primarily for agricultural labor, cannery work, service work within metropolitan areas like San Francisco. And then a little bit later, they came as Navy men. But in the early part, there's been a strong tradition of Filipino migrants working in the fields alongside Mexican farm workers. And so with Cesar Chavez, in the Filipino community, you have people like Larry Itliong, Philip Veracruz, who played a pivotal role in these social movements, particularly in Central Valley, Delano. But have, for many people, been overlooked or forgotten because we often equate the farm workers movement with Cesar Chavez.
It feels like, frankly, the history of Filipinos in the United States is not really talked about. It's almost not that it's forgotten. It's just that it's not even visible. I mean, is that one of the reasons why you wanted to write this book, was to just say, hey, we're here and we've been here?
Absolutely. You know, when I went to college, I went from Eagle Rock. When I went to undergrad, I went to a school that had very few Filipinos, but had a large number of African-American and Chicano students, undergraduates. And I just saw how powerful it was for them to take classes in African-American psychology, Chicano literature, Mexican-American history. And the equivalent just didn't exist for me. And so I always told myself that I wanted to write the book that I should have been able to read in college.
So one of the things that you write about in the book, and this was frankly super revealing to me, because Filipino artists actually have been marketed by record labels as Latinos. And there is one pretty famous case.
Mm-hmm. Joe Bataan, who's the king of Latin soul. Joe Bataan is someone who's from New York. He's someone of Filipino-American and African-American descent. But in the racial context of New York, and, you know, with the way he phenotypically looks, it was of no surprise that they marketed him as a Latin artist, because I think that was, I mean, it was more digestible for popular audiences. And then there's, you know, other more modern examples. And we think about a lot of the roles that Lou Diamond Phillips, who's also Filipino-American, plays. His most famous role is La Bamba.
Here he is, America's newest rock and roll sensation, the California Kid, Richie Valens!
I always joke to my friends that Richie Valens was played by a Filipino actor. And what I have observed, not just with the case of Lou Diamond Phillips, but even with Filipino-Americans, everyday Filipino-Americans that I've spoken to, is that there's something about the way they speak, the way they carry themselves. And perhaps this is a byproduct of growing up alongside other Latino groups and just being raised around that, where Filipino folks are able to slip under the radar in terms of not catching anyone's attention that they're different from Latinos.
So, you know, given the fact that we have this shared colonial past, do some Filipinos identify themselves, in fact, as Latinos?
So what's interesting is that even if Filipinos say that they have all of these connections with Latinos, if you were to ask them to fill out a form, you know, hardly anyone would pick Latino ever. And I think that says something. I think that it signals that it's not that Filipinos are sort of relocate themselves in that category. But what I do think is that they really appreciate the deep connections that are there that are often unspoken. And it's also a good conversation piece, because there's a lot of Filipinos who are very proactively saying things like, oh, we don't really feel like we're really Asian.
Yikes.
Yeah. It's something I heard growing up, actually. Because in L.A., you know, you have all different Asian American groups. You have Filipinos, Chinese Americans, Koreans, Vietnamese. And so there was not necessarily a strong need to identify as Asian. But what was really obvious is that Filipinos would always think of Asians as equated with East Asian groups, Chinese Americans, Japanese Americans, Koreans. And I think that a big part of that has to do with the way in which Asian is portrayed in news media, in film, in television. Like, popular constructions of what it means to be Asian often focus just on those three groups. So when you hear Asian, you're not usually thinking about the brown kid with the last name Rodriguez with a rosary on his neck. When we think about the cultural productions, the films that happen around Asian American identity, we got to find every moment we can to push the boundaries for who that includes. And I think this is not something that's unique to Filipinos. Like, South Asians, Indian Americans, Pakistani Americans feel very similar, that they're an Asian group that doesn't, that is not really seen as Asian a lot of the time.
So what do you think in the end, after interviewing 80 Filipino adults in Los Angeles for your book and your research? How do we put this together? How are you putting it together in your own head?
Well, the way I put it together, I mean, there's a couple lessons that I want to highlight from the book. Number one, I think that there's just such a need to continually question and expand the boundaries for what these categories mean. Because when you have these super, super rigid rules for who someone is based off their race, it doesn't give folks a lot of room to be different. It doesn't give folks the room to be more creative and define who they are. The other part I want to talk about is the Filipino case represents, I think, the possibilities for what interracial or interethnic friendships, relationships can look like. If this is a group that on the regular is interacting across racial lines, you know, maybe in this day and age when people feel so siloed based off ethnicity and race, we can look at a group that regularly fraternizes with folks across thick and racial lines and pick something up from them.
Anthony Cristian Ocampo, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Anthony Ocampo is a Filipino-American writer and associate professor of sociology at Cal Poly Pomona. His book is Latinos of Asia, How Filipino-Americans Break the Rules of Race. This episode was produced by Janice Yamoca and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Fernanda Chavarri, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo. Production help this week from Ashley Cleek. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior production manager is Natalia Fidelhotz. Our fellows are Maya Cueva and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our intern is Reese Williams. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at heisingsimons.org. Winecoat Foundation. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
You're Filipino, you're Filipino, you're Filipino. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, man, cool. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the story of the first registered Mexican-American Holocaust survivor.
If you look at my dad in those years, you could not tell he had gone through anything that was extreme in nature because he hid his PTSD so well.
That's next time on Latino USA.
There's nothing like a movie theater on a hot day, and there's nothing like a good show you can binge watch with a cold glass of lemonade. Summer is the perfect time to find your next favorite thing, and Pop Culture Happy Hour is here to help. Find us on the NPR One app or wherever you get podcasts.